From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Hey, another day, another dollar. Happy, happy Tuesday. It is August 2nd, 2016. We've got a fun-filled hour in store for all of our listeners out there. On today's show, we will recap what took place during the MLB trade deadline. Folks, there were 16 trades that took place, and the Detroit Tigers did not join the fun. They decided to stay put. We will evaluate what this team looks like now as the season moves forward. Also, the Olympics are just days away. And a current NBA basketball player who will be competing internationally has decided to lash out at Olympic Village out in Rio de Janeiro. Yeah, Andrew Bogut, folks. So we'll talk about the conditions out in Rio as the Olympics quickly approach. And folks, I had a fantastic time yesterday as I spent much of my day out in Flint, Michigan, as the WKAR team held a special screening of T-Rex and her quest for gold. Speaking of the Olympics, that documentary focuses on a young woman who will be trying to defend her 2012 London Olympic gold medal, Miss Clarissa Shields, who is from Flint, of course. It's just really a remarkable documentary that has been put together by a young and up-and-coming filmmaker who I got the chance to chat with, and it will premiere actually on WKAR-TV tonight at 10 p.m. We were out there. We have wall-to-wall coverage for you. You don't want to miss that. And on the back end of the show, LeBron James, he's chasing the ghost of the GOAT. Yeah, we'll explain that, and we'll have Tickle Tuesday for you. That and more. But hey, you know how we start this party. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners brought to you by myself as well as Current Sports intern Sierra Pryor. On the same day, Michigan and Michigan State could extend written scholarship offers to 2017 recruits. Both programs made the cut for top offensive lineman Mekhi Becton. Now, Becton, a three-star tackle from Highland Springs High School in Virginia, he announced a top 10 on Monday via Twitter and included Georgia, Virginia Tech, North Carolina, Pittsburgh, Virginia, Maryland, Rutgers, Penn State, and yes, Michigan and Michigan State. Becton, a 6'7", 345-pounder, is the number 16 player in Virginia, number 40 offensive tackle, and number 384 player in the 2017 class, according to 247 Sports Composite Rankings. He has more than two dozen offers and received one from MSU in January and one from U of M back in May. For the Detroit Tigers, the Major League Baseball non-waiver trade deadline came and went Monday afternoon without a sound. A level of inactivity we haven't seen around the Detroit Tigers club in a dozen years. No trades, no near misses, nothing, as the Tigers and GM Al Avila decided to stay put. But according to a team source, he worked the phones right up until the 4 p.m. deadline. The Tigers were in on three starting pitchers: Oakland's Rich Hill, Philadelphia's Jeremy Hellickson, and also LA's Hector Santiago. But in the end, as Avila predicted, to acquire those players would have meant trading one or more of the club's top four prospects, and that was simply not happening. And also, prior to Monday's trade deadline, we saw the New York Yankees do something they haven't done in more than a quarter century. They sold. Yeah. That's amazing to me when thinking about that, because we're accustomed to the Yanks and the pinstripe being just a stout ball club. Totally opposite now, right? My, oh my, how things change in time. Ardrolas Chapman, Andrew Miller, Carlos Beltran, and Ivan Nova were all traded to contenders for prospects. The Yanks could be moving toward a divorce with wants to star A-Rod. Alex Rodriguez. Sources have learned that the Yanks could release Rodriguez before the season ends or could release him in the offseason, if they do so at all. Now, while the more likely scenario still seems to be parting ways with A-Rod over the winter, a source familiar with the situation told the Daily News on Monday that there's a chance releasing the slumping DH could happen before the end of the season as part of the team's ongoing overhaul. Rodriguez is 4 homers shy of 700 for his career, is owed the remainder of his $21 million salary for this season and another $21 million guaranteed for 2017. Sierra.
Stephon Charles and Lincoln Tomlinson got into a scuffle during a rep in the offensive line versus defensive line individual drills for the Detroit Lions on Monday afternoon. Then in the heat of practice, they got into a bit more. Charles and Tomlinson stared each other down, then they started shoving each other, and it appeared at least one punch was thrown before teammates on both offensive and defensive line jumped in to break it up. It isn't exactly what Jim Caldwell wants to see, the fighting portion of it, but the intensity appears to be a good thing. Lions defensive end Wallace Gilberry told ESPN, "It shows that the guys are not backing down, but at the end of the day, it's not what's wanted out here. Coach doesn't approve of it, so it's not acceptable, because at the end of the day, we're all teammates."
That's not even a big story, I don't think. I mean, hey, fights happen in training camp, right? All right, free agent running back Reggie Bush is headed to Buffalo after accepting a one-year incentive-laden deal with the Bills. Veteran and Super Bowl-winning rusher Bush is coming off a torn ACL after slipping last November on concrete at the Edward Jones Dome in St. Louis. Now, the injury was feared to be career-ending, and Bush, who's 31 years old, and is entering his 11th NFL season. He played in just 5 games last year for the 49ers, accumulating only 28 rushing yards on 8 carries with 4 receptions for 19 yards. His last 1,000-yard season was in 2013, his first of 2 seasons with the Detroit Lions after a 2-year stint out in Miami. For his career, Bush has 5,493 yards and 35 touchdowns, 470 receptions for 3,508 yards and 18 scores, and has 4 punt returns for TDs.
The Bakari Alexander era at Detroit Mercy is scheduled to start October 29th when the team hosts Wayne State at Callahan Hall. A tip-off time hasn't been released yet, but the Titans will announce the Horizon League portion of their schedule Tuesday. The team will play an exhibition against Ferris State, then face Adrian on November 11th. Non-conference games include a visit to Illinois in the preseason, NIT on November 18th, along with games at Florida State on November 20th and at New Hampshire on November 23rd. Manhattan and Eastern Michigan will travel to Callahan Hall on November 26th and 30th, respectively. The Horizon League tournament is at Joe Louis Arena in Detroit for the 2nd straight year, starting on March 3rd.
Andrew Bogut has let rip at the standard of accommodation at Olympic Village, launching the ironic hashtag IOC Luxury Lodging on Twitter after arriving in Rio. Now, Bogut shared a picture of himself putting together a shower curtain, and then he went on to say, quote, "Putting together a shower curtain so we can shower and not flood the place before arriving at Luxury Lodging. We believe a bed is not vital for sleep. Fine-tuned athletes can sleep standing up," end quote. So Bogut is clearly being sarcastic here and poking fun at the non-luxury lodging at Rio for the athletes competing. Bogut's comments come just days after Australia refused to check in at the Athletes Village when it officially opened on Sunday, complaining about water leaks, gas leaks, electrical faults, and filth that delegation head Kitty Chiller said endangered athletes. All right, well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Let's start the show.
It's such a special night. What's not very special about tonight is when the guys that are going to the Hall of Fame are your age. So, hopefully that doesn't happen again, RKK. But we can't help it when guys like Kevin, when it's their time. And it was Kevin's time. So you guys, enjoy the rest of the night. Kevin, we love you. You're an amazing person. You're an amazing teammate. And as great as a player Kevin was, he's a better friend. There's no doubt.
All right, folks, welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. I always love starting the show with the most interesting thing that I've seen in the last 24 hours since we got off the air at 2 p.m. the day prior. And quarterback Tom Brady, love his personality, one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play. Of course, Tom will have to miss the first four games of the New England Patriots season due to the whole Deflategate scandal, which many people feel as though they got wrong. I believe they got it wrong as well, but hey, Roger Goodell has way too much power. I won't rant about Deflategate. I wanted to start the show with this because it was just a pretty cool moment as Tom Brady, who has attempted to keep a low profile and really not come out and make any comments concerning his four-game suspension. He made an appearance, a surprise appearance, last night at the New England Patriots Hall of Fame induction ceremony for his former teammate and running back, Kevin Faulk. Brady showed up at the end of the ceremony and unzipped his jacket on stage to reveal that he was wearing Faulk's old number 33 jersey. He then talked to the crowd, and you heard a bit of what he had to say there, saying, quote, "Thank you guys for supporting him. Thank you guys for supporting us. We have the best fans in the world." And he gave a great speech as the crowd began chanting his own name. And at that point, he said, no, this is for Kevin, all right? The connection between the two players, I mean, they go back like four flats on the Cadillac, all right? They played 12 seasons together. And the 40-year-old Faulk had worn Brady's number 12 jersey while announcing the Patriots' third-round draft choice, if you remember, at the 2016 NFL Draft, basically saying, hey, I know everything is going awry right now for Tom concerning this whole four-game suspension, but myself and the Patriots organization, we got your back. Brady concluded his remarks by saying, Kevin, we love you. So that was very cool stuff. There will be a huge spotlight on the New England Patriots organization as the season begins, and Jimmy Garoppolo will step into that starting role trying to fill huge shoes in Tom Brady. I thought I was filling huge shoes when I took the job here at WKAR trying to replace Earl Robinson, who was here for 39 years. That ain't got nothing on Jimmy Garoppolo, all right? So it's going to be a fun year to see how Jimmy starts the season in replace of Tom. Folks, we've got a great show in store for you all. I'm running off fumes right now because I had a pretty long day yesterday from the time I got off yesterday's radio show at 2 p.m. till about 11 o'clock at night. I was in Flint, Michigan. And boy, oh boy, it was a great time out there, I must say. And this was a much-needed event in lieu of the Flint water crisis and all of the negative press that situation has gotten over time and many people. And I want to throw this out there, too. I mean, people can't forget that this city is still going through a lot. You know, sure, you can use the water there if it has a filter on it, but there are many areas that are still affected by this. It's still not 100% safe down there. And I feel as though in the recent months, many people haven't been talking about, you know, when I say many people, I mean the media have not been talking about the situation out in Flint. You know, as it goes with most heinous situations, right? You know, you initially you're outraged and you see it in every single newspaper and TV program, and then a few weeks go by and it's not even leading the headlines anymore. So I want to put it out there that the city of Flint still needs help. They still need water bottles. I mean, it's still a tough situation out there. But it was cool because this is my first time in Flint, Michigan, since the whole Flint, you know, water crisis took place. And the reason that myself, along with our other stout WKAR TV members, the reason why we were in the house was because we were showing an advanced screening of a special documentary centered on Flint's favorite daughter right now, That being Clarissa Shields, who won the Olympic gold medal in the 2012 London Women's Boxing Trials. And it's really remarkable because that was the first time, if you remember back in 2012, that was the first time that we saw women's boxing on the Olympic stage, making, ideally, Clarissa Shields the very first gold medalist in the sport. How cool is that, right? And again, she's born and bred right in Flint, Michigan. She's hard-nosed. I mean, she's a remarkable fighter, an absolutely remarkable fighter. And her story is so compelling when you look at her upbringing, a tough upbringing. She had a tough, tough upbringing, divide within the family. And then, you know, she picks up the sport of boxing and initially who eventually became her trainer. He didn't want to train her at first because he didn't believe in females boxing. And then he saw her jab the bag and saw that she was a great listener and said, hey, I may have something here. Just a remarkable story that has been put together in about an hour and 24 minute documentary, which is really unbelievable. It's entitled T-Rex and Her Quest for Gold. And we showed an advanced screening of it for the city of Flint yesterday at the famous Burston Fieldhouse, which is home of Clarissa Shields. That's where she trains. I got a chance to go down in the basement and check out her very own gym, which is painted in purple and gold. I got a chance to meet her trainers. I got a chance to meet friends who know her. I got a chance to meet her former boyfriend. I mean, it was just unbelievable. Unbelievable. And when you walk in there, if Burston rings a bell for our listeners out there, I mean, Burston has a ton of history because it's not just where Clarissa Shields trains, but before her, I mean, the Burston basketball court is where guys like Morris Peterson, Mateen Cleaves, I mean, I could go on and on and on. You know, it's where the Flintstones used to ball out of control when they were coming up before they became Spartans here on the campus at Michigan State University and delivered the 2000 NCAA Men's Basketball Championship. So it's pretty cool because they have a mural that has Mateen's face on it. You can see Mo Pete's face on it as well. And other Flint, you know, greats who have, you know, Mark Ingram, also his face is painted on there. There's a big sign, commemorating Mark Ingram winning the Heisman Trophy at the University of Alabama. Then you have a huge picture outside, you know, that says, that has Clarissa. It's a picture of Clarissa Shields with her gold medal around her neck. So it's just a legendary place, folks. It has a ton, and I do mean a ton, of history. So later on this hour, I'm going to give you a sort of a behind-the-scenes look at our coverage from yesterday's visit in Flint, Michigan at Burston Fieldhouse. You will get to hear from two individuals that know Clarissa pretty well, I must say. And they've had a direct hand in the success between the ropes for Miss Clarissa Shields. So again, we had an advanced screening of that documentary yesterday, but you can check out T-Rex and Her Quest for Gold tonight at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. It was my first time watching it last night with everybody that was there, to attend the advanced screening. And I must say, folks, it is a fantastic documentary. It is a must-see. It will be, hitting Netflix pretty soon. There are many people that want to pick up this documentary because it's so good. It's very well done. So we'll get to that in just a minute. But I want to start today's show. I want to transition today's show now to a little bit of Detroit Tigers talk. Now, for the first time in a while, we saw the Detroit Tigers sit on their hands and say, you know what? We're not going to make any moves here. We're not going to make any moves. We haven't seen this happen in a long time for the Detroit Tigers. I really thought they were going to make one move. And, as I stated in our headliners, I mean, you heard, per a team source, that GM Al Avila did work the phones right up until the deadline. I mean, the Tigers were in on three starting pitchers, Oakland's Rich Hill, Phillies, Jeremy Hellickson, and LA's Hector Santiago. Things just didn't pan out. So no trades, no near misses, just nothing. And I really believe that this was the right move for the Tigers because when you evaluate this roster from top to bottom, the Tigers, there's really nothing out there that would have significantly helped this Detroit Tigers ball club moving forward. Now, we're talking about a squad right now that is, again, competing in the American League Central. I don't think anybody is chasing the Cleveland Indians. The Cleveland Indians have the best pitching, clearly the best pitching in the American League. They've got a great batting rotation. I mean, it's going to be tough for anyone to catch Cleveland. I think it's a really, I think the Tigers are lucky right now to only be in back of Cleveland just four games in the division, and they have won six straight. Right now, the Tigers are the hottest team in the AL Central, and they open up, of course, a series against the Chicago White Sox starting tonight. But at the same time, you know, as the season moves on and we get closer and closer to the playoffs and start to knock on the door of October, I mean, the record is going to pan out for the Indians. You know, already they're 60-43. That's their win-loss ratio right now. And moving forward, this team is too good not to win the AL Central. So I think that's pretty much in the bag. For the Tigers, it's all about consistency, folks. Of course, right now, this is a team that will be vying for a wild card spot. That's what the Tigers should be focusing on right now. And I tell you what, folks, they're only a game and a half in back of a wild card berth right now. Only in back of the Boston Red Sox and, of course, the Toronto Blue Jays. So it's all about consistency for me. And you look at what the Tigers don't have right now. They've won six straight, but just think about if they had, you know, Jordan Zimmermann, if they had Daniel Norris, if they had slugger J.D. Martinez. Those three are currently on the disabled list. And if you look at this trade deadline, it's hard to make an evaluation of what the Tigers need right now because those three are not playing. And those three are better than anything that was out there before the trade deadline. So I totally agree. I mean, with the Tigers not making any moves here, Al Avila, of course, you know, you want to test the waters. You want to see what's out there. You know, maybe you get lucky. You know what I mean? But, you know, so I can't blame Al Avila for working the phones and just seeing what's out there and seeing if something could be worked out. But if not, you know, hey, you're not crying because you know that you have three names that can come in and help an already a club that's already right now trending in the right direction. Again, six straight for the Tigers. Now, I'm not going crazy over that six-game win streak, but at the same time, they are in a great position for a wild card berth. So they're competing for a one-game wild card. You know, when you look at the wild cards, you know, position, it's a tough one because you got to win that game to move on, and you have to bank on putting your best lineup out there. You put your best pitcher out there, and you just kind of just see what happens. And it's so tough in comparison to a series and advancing via a series. You know, you're just looking at, and I think it makes baseball exciting because I love watching those wild card games because in the matter of one game, in the matter of 3 hours, you know, you could see a team advance and compete with a chance to possibly ride that momentum into a deep run into the playoffs. So for me, it's about the Tigers pitching getting better. I think that when you look at the rotation, I mean, you look at JV, who has, I believe, silenced the critics a bit here. And what I mean by that is, you know, there was a lot of doubt concerning Justin Verlander last year, a lot of doubt, you know, coming into this season. I think for the most part, Justin Verlander has done a relatively good job. Not a great job. Could he be better? Yeah, certainly, you know, from a consistency standpoint. But Justin Verlander has done, he's held down the fort, so to speak. All right. Jordan Zimmermann, though, is the guy I'm concerned about. You know, the number two starter. You know, with these injuries, I don't know how serious these injuries are going to be moving forward for him. Once he does get healthy just to go out there on the mound, I mean, is he going to be able to go out there and get hot off start? I don't know. I think that's a bit unfair to expect that from Jay Zim. And boy, oh boy, where would the squad be without Michael Fulmer? I mean, man, oh man. I mean, this young stud has been great as a rookie. So he's really kept the boat afloat when it comes to starting pitching. But I need to see more from guys like JV, and we really need to see Jay Zim come out of the disabled list healthy. That's the big thing here for the Tigers. As far as the bats are concerned, I love this team. I've loved the Tigers' batting rotation for quite some time now. That has not been the problem for the Tigers. It's always been the relief pitching, which has gotten better. That has been average. The relief pitching for the Tigers has been average, and it's been better than average in this six-game win streak. You know, guys have come in and really closed the door in critical moments. So when you look up, how this stacks up for the Tigers right now, again, they are a game and a half in back of the Bo Sox and the Toronto Blue Jays for a berth in the American League wild card position. And that's why I think that gives a lot of Tigers fans out there hope. And, you know, despite the fact that they compete in a division where they had to go against the Cleveland Indians, who, by the way, got even better prior to the trade deadline ending at 4 p.m. because they picked up Mr. Andrew Miller from the New York Yankees. My goodness. I mean, this was an already good squad from top to bottom. But then you add Andrew Miller to close the door, game in and game out for you. I mean, no one's catching the Indians. But what gives the Detroit Tigers fans hope out there is that they do have a legit shot at a wild card spot. Despite the fact that guys like me don't believe that even if the Tigers make a wild card spot, they're not going far. But at the end of the day, the question here that we're proposing to you all is, do you think that the Tigers made the right decision in not making any moves and staying put at the trade deadline? In my eyes, yes. Because in comparison to what this Tigers team already has, I didn't see anything out there that had me going insane in the membrane to try and woo to put on the old English D. Simple as that. I want to invite right now, before we hit our first break, the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance. Isaac, right move for the Tigers?
Yeah, I think so. I think the Tigers, like I've said before, it can always get worse. People forget that. But the Tigers have been rolling pretty well so far after sputtering out of the gates. But people forget that trades can go awry. This isn't a team stocked full of prospects. So if you want to keep competing for a championship or a playoff spot, whatever it may be, you've got to stay pat with the team that you have. If you can make a great move, shock everybody, get something universally considered a win, go for it. But obviously that was not on the table, and the Tigers don't have unlimited resources to give up. What they do have prospects in is pitching, and that is the last place that they want to give up any positional player for the future. With a strong pitching staff, your team can last forever. And now that the Tigers do have a few pitchers for the future, you don't want to trade any of those guys away to get an outfielder or an infielder who, quite frankly, would be a slight improvement. This team, I don't think they compete for a World Series either, but I think they're positioned well right now. I think they more or less need to do what they're doing.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think the other thing to bring up here is, again, if the Tigers were to go after a huge name before the trade deadline, they would have to give up a lot. Simple as that. And, you know, right now, you know, you have a lot of guys, you're lining up your ducks for the future, and you have a lot of young studs for this team that can carry this ball club for some years here. And you don't want to give up guys like, you know, you just don't want to give up a big name. Because to me, it evokes a sense of panic if you do that. When you really don't need to panic right now. You're still in the fight for this whole playoff contention here. You know, whether it be a wild card or not, you're still in the fight. That's something that can be said for the majority of teams out there in the majors. And also payroll flexibility. I mean, you talk about Moolah. That was another concern for me. Another reason why I didn't want the Tigers to give up a big name or make really any move unless it was to prove very viable off the bat for this team moving forward. Flexibility when it comes to the moolah was something that the Tigers did not have before 4 p.m. hit yesterday.
Well, names that I think they would have had to give up to make a big move happen is names like Iglesias, Matt Boyd off the pitching staff, Daniel Norris, guys who they traded stars for to get and help build this young team so that they could sustain excellence for the future. Because let's face it, the Tigers' best is not necessarily going forward with the current lineup in the field, with Miguel Cabrera aging and showing his first real sign of a bit of a drop-off this year. Ian Kinsler also climbing up the ranks a little bit in terms of the age column. So for the Tigers, it makes sense to keep your prospects. If you can acquire any, that's great, but this is a team that is not ready to go into rebuilding mode yet, rightfully so. The fans aren't ready for that. But at the same time, one player is not going to make the difference for this team winning a World Series.
Not at all. I agree with you. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, again, we will be taking your calls, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. We will also bring to you our coverage from Burston Fieldhouse, home of the one, the only, Miss Clarissa Shields. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Again, we are taking your calls, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet us at my Twitter handle of Al Martin at WKAR or at the official Twitter page of the show at WKAR_sports. All right, well, let's go to line one right now. I know we got our dear friend on line one, Ray from Indiana. Ray, how you doing, my friend, and welcome to Current Sports.
How you doing, Skipper?
I am blessed, my man. What's on your mind?
You ready for football season?
Of course. What kind of question is that, Ray? I'm always ready for football season.
Hey, I don't know how many years you got to beat Michigan. 7 out of 8. They still disrespect you guys. They still got you third or fourth in the league.
Yeah, you know, and you know, it's one of those things that to be honest with you, Ray, I think that Mark D'Antonio, he loves it. To be honest with you, I think Mark D'Antonio he loves lying in the weeds as the season goes on. And, you know, diverting the attention away from this program, just getting win after win after win, and then putting this squad in prime position to compete for a Big Ten championship at the end of the year. I think D'Antonio likes it. He likes operating without having that spotlight on his squad throughout the duration of the season.
He was on SportsCenter this morning.
I saw that.
Yeah, and that's pretty well what he said. He didn't say it in those words, but kind of.
Right,
you know,
right.
Yeah, we'll just wait and see. You know, you don't play it on the paper; you play it on the field.
Exactly, and you know, you look at again the way it's riddled out when it comes to predictions for the Big Ten East. Ohio State is the favorite. Then you have Michigan, and then Michigan State coming in third, and many polls left and right. And Michigan, you know, this is a team that won 10 games last year. They went 10-3. They went 6-2 in the Big Ten East, and I went on to tell Isaac before the season, if you had to put me on the spot right now and give a prediction on how the season is going to pan out for Michigan, I do think this is going to be a very, very good team, but I think they end up with kind of the same record they had last year. I think they finished 10-3 this year.
Well, did you ever research that quarterback coming from Colorado?
What are you talking about? John O'Korn?
Got it transferred over from Colorado. He's supposed to be so fabulous. You know, Reddick almost went the whole season without an interception after the first game. I don't think they can get that kind of quarterback play again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I hear you. I hear
they
you.
They didn't turn the ball over at all, I mean, after that first game.
Yeah, you're talking about Jake Rudock. And the thing about Rudock is, Rudock, if you remember, though, Ray, Rudock wasn't lights out to start the year. You know, Rudock is a guy that when I first saw – to start the Michigan year, I mean, I didn't like his mechanics.
Right.
I didn't like his inability to throw on the run. Right. I didn't like his overall decision-making. And I was I wasn't high on him to start the year, but you know, Jim Harbaugh is such a mastermind at getting quarterbacks to play at a level that's consistent and that is within his system that he likes to run. Right. That Jake Rudock just naturally got better as the year went on. And whoever they choose, whether it be Wilton Spate, whether it be John O'Korn, whether it be Shane Morris, whether it be Brandon Peters, I think whoever they choose, first off. And it's the thing that I don't like. And it's a catch-22, and I want to throw this question out as well because there are some programs that will, when embarking on a season where they don't know who their quarterback is going to be, there are some programs that like to name a quarterback very early and just let it ride from preseason training camp all the way into the season and throughout the season. While there are some programs that like to have that quarterback competition dwindle on into preseason training camp and won't name one possibly until after week one of the college football year. And if you remember, Michigan State was in a conundrum when Kirk Cousins left this team and you had Andrew Maxwell come in and claim the reins of the starting quarterback for the Spartans. There was, you know, there was a lot of criticism there when it came to whether or not Andrew Maxwell should have been named so early as a starting quarterback, rather than, you know, letting the quarterback competition play out throughout preseason training camp. And that's something that Mark D'Antonio, and I think, you know, we had Seth Kinker behind the glass, and I think Seth can attest to this. Mark D'Antonio addressed that time period back in 2012, and Mark D'Antonio wishes that he would have let that quarterback competition play out before naming Andrew Maxwell the starting quarterback so early.
I think they're going to do that this year, don't you?
Yeah, no. I think that they're going to – that as far as Michigan State goes, Mark D'Antonio said during Big Ten Media Days that he is – it's anybody's job right now, but, quote, Tyler O'Connor is in the lead. But he is going to let this quarterback competition, you know, go week after week throughout preseason training camp before naming that number one guy. As far as the depth chart is concerned – Tyler O'Connor is that guy. But, you know, Mark D'Antonio didn't come out and say, yes, Tyler O'Connor will be our starting quarterback when we play Furman to start the year next
well, you
next
know,
month.
The Cleveland Browns, as bad as they've been over the years, they already named their quarterback. They're going to bring RJ in.
Yeah, RG3. Have they named RG3 as the guy yet? I thought they were going to let that play out
I thought that's what they had. But anyways, hey, let's go on to one other subject here. Tiger Woods. Mm-hmm. You know, that agent for him, he's quite a liar. Everybody was saying he wasn't going to play all year, and he kept saying, who told him that's a lie? Well, they ended up being right, didn't they? He didn't play all year.
Yeah, he's not going to eat. Yeah, Tiger Woods announced, I believe it was last week, that he will not be participating on the PGA Tour at all this year. He's still, but you know what? Tiger Woods is going through a lot, you know. And again, yeah, you can't really call his. I didn't know that his agent made that statement prior to the announcement of Tiger Woods saying I'm hanging up my clubs for the rest of the year. But yeah, he nailed it. So can you really get on him then, Ray?
Well, I'm just saying some people had leaked it out way back in March before the Masters that he was not going to play all year, and he said, "Who told you that? That's not true."
Oh, the agent said that's not true. Okay,
yeah, the agent said it wasn't true, and it ended up being true.
Well, it could have been. It he may have been right at the time. Maybe that was just a rumor mill. You know,
that's true. I mean, you got a bad back. This might be the best thing he did. He rests the back for a year, and maybe next year he can come back, but. You know, he's going to be 41 next year. I just don't know if he's ever going to be able to win again after been setting out a whole year, you know?
Ray, I had this debate with my stepdad on the golf course this past Sunday, and we got into a huge debate on whether – because he's a diehard Tiger Woods fan. I am a diehard Tiger Woods fan myself, and I remember the glory days, the early 2000s, when Tiger was just absolutely dominant. He was – He was from Pluto. I mean, we had never seen anything like him. He was better than Jack Nicklaus at the time. And it looked like it was a clear shoe-in that Tiger was going to break the major record of Jack Nicklaus. But I just think that, you know, we've been saying this for so long now. And when you talk about a back injury, I mean, and you talk about surgeries and pinched nerves, and then he's had the problems with his knees. Right. We've been holding on to hope far too long now. I just don't see, and I really hope he proves me wrong, but I really don't see how we will ever, you know, see a return, a quote unquote return of Tiger Woods being what he used to be.
I told people 5 years ago, the only thing to stop him breaking Jack Nicklaus records is a woman in a car accident. And both of them happened to him.
Well, I guess you nailed that one in, huh, Ray?
I don't know, but you know they got the NFL Hall of Fame game this
they
Sunday,
do.
And they're gonna be inducting the five players into the Hall of Fame. Don't forget about Kurt Warner, my friend. Call down there for me.
I got your back, Ray. I have not forgotten.
All right, buddy.
All right.
God bless you.
Thanks so much, Ray. Appreciate it. Have a good afternoon. Again, folks, if you want to call in to be a part of today's show, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. All right, I've been teasing this all hour. I was out in Flint, Michigan, along with the WKAR-TV team, as well as our intern, Sierra Pryor, who you heard at the very beginning of our show during our headliners. And it was just a fantastic time being out there, getting a chance to mingle with the Flint, Michigan community. And, you know, getting a chance to be there for an advanced screening of a documentary that centers on, right now, Flint's favorite daughter, that being Clarissa Shields, who won the Olympic gold medal out in London back in 2012, the very first year that the Olympics introduced female boxing to the forefront. So Clarissa Shields became the very first gold medalist within the sport. This documentary follows, it really follows Clarissa leading up to the 2012 Olympics and during a brief period after she won the gold medal as well. It's a fantastic documentary entitled T-Rex and Her Quest for Gold. It will air on WKAR-TV tonight at 10 p.m. And I got a chance to chat with really two men that have been so influential in the life of Clarissa Shields. And I want to start with the man by the name of Bryant Nolden, who is the executive director of Burston Fieldhouse, the gym that Clarissa trains at. Also, Bryant Nolden is a county commissioner, first district out in Genesee County, and is all about, you know, doing positive things within the community. Bryant, being the executive director at the Fieldhouse, has known Clarissa since she first walked in to throw on a pair of boxing gloves and train in the basement. And I just chatted with Brian about, you know, what this moment means, not just for Clarissa, but the entire city of Flint, Michigan, watching her on the Olympic stage.
You know, the city of Flint has always been a very resilient community, and Clarissa Shields just shows the resiliency, you know, by beating odds that were just astronomical. She was able to overcome, adapt, and really reach the pinnacle of her chosen profession. So that's just the way that the folks here in the city of Flint are. They've always been the kind of people that we're hardworking, we're very determined, and we have good willpower. And I think that's what it's been instilled in Clarissa, and that's why she's been so successful.
For Clarissa and for many kids alike, I mean, those who grow up in tough environments, I always say, it can go two ways. Pressure either busts pipes or it makes diamonds. What has allowed Clarissa to thrive under pressure and not steer the other way and completely shut down?
Well, I think it's been the just the overall group of individuals that's been in her life. You have Jason Crutchfield, you have Ed Kendall, you have the other coaches from down in Burston, you have the community as a whole. You have the folks from her school that saw something in her, you know, once she started to do well with this boxing, that really worked with her. So I think it's just, it's the village kind of syndrome, where it takes a village to raise a person. Well, it was a village that embraced Clarissa Shields and got her to the point where she's at now.
what makes her such a special boxer. What, when you saw her box for the first time, if you can remember, what went through your head when you said, wow, she's got a lot of potential in this thing?
She got a lot of heart, you know, and that's it. When it comes to boxing, the more heart you have, the better boxer you're going to be. And then she is the kind of person that never wants someone to do something better than she can do it. So, you know, that's one of the reasons why the boys were always at awe with her skill sets, because she was always able to overcome and adapt and be able to outdo the boys in everything she does. And that's it. That's it in a nutshell. She has great heart, great willpower, and great determination.
Do the boys kind of, does that get under their skin when they see Clarissa doing what she does as a female in comparison to what they do?
I think initially, yes, but then after a while, she became an equal, and then she surpassed quite a few of them, and she's continually to surpass them. So it's just a great, great story. She's a great young lady, and, you know, Burston Fieldhouse was her birthplace, and we just want to make sure that we continue to keep this facility open so that we can have some more Clarissa Shields coming out of here very, very soon.
Do you see the potential for that? I mean, have you seen, since the success of Clarissa now going into Rio now, I mean, have you seen other young women or even or anybody out there that have seen her success right here at Burston and said, you know what, I want to kind of follow in her footsteps?
Absolutely. That's one thing that we're seeing. We're seeing a real uptick in terms of young folks coming down and wanting to box, girls as well as young men. And it's been a great, great showing. And this particular program is absolutely free. Only thing that the kids have to pay for is their boxing license through USA Boxing, which is about $60. Mm-hmm. After they pay the $60, all of the training is absolutely free. All of the coaches, they're not paid any money whatsoever. So that's what's so unique about this particular boxing facility. It's affordable because all you gotta do is pay that, and everything else we take care of.
Wow, that is really cool. All right, final one for you, Brian. For Clarissa, out in Rio right now, what goes through your head when you see her on the Olympic stage?
Proud. A proud young lady from the city of Flint. A proud city. A proud center here at Burston. I'm just overwhelmed with emotion because, you know, I know where she came from. I remember when she was downstairs first starting out and when they were going to boxing tournaments where we would have softball on Sundays and they would be out there soliciting folks for some donations so we'd be able to get these kids to these tournaments. So to be able to see her go from that level to the level where she's at now, dreams are possible. And it all takes is willpower and determination.
All right. Gotta love that. Again, that was Bryant Nolden, who is the executive director at Burston Fieldhouse, home of, training hub of where Clarissa Shields competes. Of course, Clarissa is a native of Flint, Michigan. Let's get our second break. When we come back, you will get to hear from the trainer of Clarissa Shields. You don't want to miss that and so much more. We'll be right back. Again, folks, Independent Lens, T-Rex, her fight for gold will air tonight at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. It's a documentary about the coming-of-age story of boxing phenom Clarissa Shields. The boxing star from Flint, Michigan, was just 17 years old when she won the Olympic gold medal for women's boxing back in 2012 out in London. Now with a record of 69-1, she is ranked number one in the world heading into her second Olympic competition, the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Summer Games. Again, myself, along with other members of the WKAR-TV team, we were out in Flint, Michigan from 2 to about 10 last night. talking with the city and premiering, giving an advanced screening of that very documentary. So you just heard from Bryant Nolden, who is the executive director of Burston Fieldhouse, also county commissioner, first district of Genesee County. I also got the chance to chat with Clarissa's first trainer. Yes, his name is Jason Crutchfield, and he has an elongated tenure in the sport of boxing. He was once a professional himself, now turned trainer. Well, he was no longer a trainer with Clarissa, but he became a trainer after seeing Clarissa one day come into the gym and saw her just glaring talent for the sport. So here's myself with Jason as we were right in the midst of a training period with Jason's other boxers as well. So listen closely on this one.
It's pretty much proof that, you know, hard work pays off. That girl worked hard from the age of 11 to 17, you know. And, I mean, she's been dedicated, faithful to herself and to the game. And, you know, it's paying off for her.
Jason, got to know, what was your first interaction like with Clarissa? I mean, because I was going around looking at the pictures, and it's really remarkable, especially to see a female pick up the sport of boxing. Do you remember the first time you saw Clarissa box? And from then on, when did you know she had some potential at this sport?
When she first came down, I didn't pay attention to her because I thought she was a female boxer. They pretty much come and go. But she stuck. She stuck around. And I remember one day, I had a guy by the name. It was one of the guys that was a senior to me. He was teaching her stuff. He was teaching her how to box. I said, you can have her teacher. And he was teaching her. And one day, he didn't show up. And I said, okay, come on, show me what you've been learning. And she came over, and she showed me what she was doing. And she was doing it better than the boys, a lot better than the boys. So I said, oh, you got to come with me. I snatched her. I said, oh, you got to come with me.
And that was it.
Yep, that was it.
Now, you just mentioned something interesting there because you said you see a lot of female boxers come and go. Why is that?
I don't know. I don't think some of them just not tough enough, you know. I don't think they're really tough enough. This is a tough sport, you know. I'm not saying that they can't do it, but she bought me. She bought me. I changed my whole vision about female boxing. After I started working with her and teaching her, and she started catching on real quick and just catching on everything.
Right.
I mean, she just kind of changed my mind about female boxing.
Jason, she is the very first American Olympic gold medal winner in the sport, which is completely amazing to me. When you look at her skill set in comparison to others out there, what makes Clarissa so different and so special?
I think it has a lot to do with our technique, the way we teach, and the way, I mean, just the way she learned and her listening, and I mean, just her tenacity. That really got me. I found out that she was tougher than the boys. She was a lot tougher than the boys. I mean, she would back down to nobody, and she had. I mean, she stand her ground with anybody, even boys. Yeah.
Do you have a story that kind of puts her toughness in perspective?
Yeah, I got a, I remember. It was a girl. It was, she was young. She was real young. And she, I had a girl come down. And this lady was from Lansing. And she was high up in the rankings in the nation. And this little girl I had was just 15. And she was about 30 pounds lighter than her. And she got in there and beat the girl to, wow, man, I wish I had film of that. You would just freak out if you seen that, the way she done her. And that girl been traveling all over the world boxing. This girl ain't been nowhere. She hadn't even been to a ranking national tournament yet because she wasn't old enough.
Wow. That's unbelievable, Jason. Yeah. Now, when you look at her skill set, and you know, she'll be competing in Rio in a matter of days right now. Mm-hmm. When you have and stumble upon a talent like Clarissa's, do you handle it with more responsibility than you would any other boxer as a coach?
No. I don't do that. I try to treat them all the same. I try to give them everything that I got, you know. It's just, you know, and when they have, you know, she's physically gifted. She's a physically gifted girl. But you have to teach. that still has to be taught because you can't live off that. Right. So, you know, she's pretty much fundamentally sound as far as the fundamentals of boxing. But I don't, you know, I don't teach nobody any different than nobody else. They all learn the same thing here.
That was a great answer, Jason. I was seeing if I could get you with that. I like poking a bear every once in a while, all right? Now, with that being said, how has she made you a better coach?
You know what? I can say this. She's made me a better coach. She opened me up. Because, like you say, I was kind of stagnant as far as on women boxing. And it made me reach out more. So now when another girl comes down here, we've had a couple of girls down here, I make sure I reach out to them. And because I was kind of, no girls. You know, no girls, yeah. Yeah, that's how she got me. Yeah, she got me. She said, I'm bought now. Anybody can do it. Anybody can do it.
At 7 p.m., when people sit down upstairs and check out the T-Rex documentary, what do you want people to take away from the story of Clarissa Shields?
Hard work. Hard work really pays off. You know, I want a lot of the boxers to see it because I want them to know that they can trust and believe in me. That I know what I'm doing. I've been in the game for a long time. I know what I'm doing. They're getting the right stuff. All they got to do is follow instructions. That's basically it. And you'll see this in the film. I know you probably seen it.
I haven't seen it yet. I wanted to see it.
You'll see it in the. You'll see it. Yes, you will.
Now I just asked you this upstairs, but I got to get it on camera. How did she get the name T-Rex?
It was a guy by the name of Darion, which was some kin to the Real Brothers, because Bumper used to be down here with me, and he saw her fight one time, and he was like, "Dang, your name should be T-Rex." So your name should be T-Rex. The way you be dogging them girls out, the way your name should be T-Rex. She was about 12, 13 years old at the time. Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, I want to talk about the gym very briefly here. FWC, what do you want to make sure that this gym teaches young men and women who are dedicated to coming in here and working their butt off? What do you want to prepare these young kids, these young men and women for?
Well, this is really a gym. Our gym is structured discipline. I mean, we don't only build boxers. We build good people. The first thing is respect. You know, when you come in, you respect all the coaches. You address them as coach. Coach so-and-so, you don't just call me by my name. You say Coach Jason, Coach Crutchfield, whatever. That's pivotal to me. I mean, that's very important, you know. There's no way around it. You're not going to be able to learn if you don't respect us. If you don't respect us, you won't be able to learn. You'll be just like, you'll look at us like you, like a peer. And that means you won't go no further.
Fantastic stuff. Appreciate it, man. We'll be in touch, man. All right. Definitely.
Oh, he was a joy to interview, folks. Again, catch T-Rex and her quest for gold tonight at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. That does it for this edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870, East Lansing. As always, take care, have one fantastic afternoon, and be easy, people.